I have nothing to disclose. Where do I just set this? Yeah. Yes. Okay. So, can you do me a favor and set that?
Yeah. Okay, but you want to be, you're being recorded, so you need to stay near your mic anyway.
I didn't allow myself to be recorded.
Oh, okay.
So, I'm just going to move a little. That's perfect, because I think you guys can see this. It's just tough, and especially when you get to the last speaker and get a little rest, to continue to sit. So, I'm a poet. My name is Karen. I'm a public health consultant, and I'm also working on a PhD in this area. But I just wanted to talk about, first, about four HIAs that I've completed over the last year, and kind of just talk a little bit about how they're similar and some differences across them, and then I'll zoom in on one particular one. So there's, again, what's similar across all four of these is that they were all focused on low-income, high-minority communities. So it was addressing issues of disparities and equity, access issues. So that was something in common across all of them. Three of them were informing a planning process. So three of them were planning processes. Two of them were stationary plans. So meaning there's a light rail station, and so you kind of have a radius around the light rail station and look at increased walkability, bring in retail, those kinds of things. And then one of them was a neighborhood plan. So again, you know, these planning documents are, they're trying to map up where do we have more economic development, what kind of housing should we have here, where can we improve walkability, those kinds of things. The last one was a little different that I did over the summer, and that was they were trying to make a decision. So just to make this simple, is they were trying to make a decision on a recreation center and where should it be located. So they said, okay, we think it should be here. There was a task force that was put together, spent a lot of time on this, and said it should be here. But the bottom line was that the community that was most in need was over here. And so the Stapleton Foundation, University of Colorado Denver, had gotten a lot of data. So I just came in. It was one of those rare moments when you almost have so much data, you don't even know what to do with it all. And so I was kind of reading through all this great data to say, what is going to make the best case to say, we need that rec center to be here. This is the community with the greatest need by far. They wouldn't even be able to access that rec center at all. Huge disparity issues, trying to make comparisons across other areas within the city. And it always came up low, whether it is how much park space there is. Of course, all kinds of specific health issues. There was serious disparities there. So we were trying to make that case, and so that's what that one specifically was about, of how do we shift decision makers and say, let's not have it there, but let's have it over here. So that had a little different focus on it. It was only 8 pages, the HIA. So we talk about length and that kind of stuff. This was only 8 pages. It was translated into Spanish so that many people in the community could understand it and get engaged in the process better. So that was quite a different kind of process that I had. So I'm not going to go. We haven't really gotten into too much about this, but there are so many, just value added that HIAs are bringing to the table. We talk about them quite often, right? Informing decision making, to be healthier decisions that we're going to make. We've heard quite a bit, some of the difficulty is we still don't have this strong, clear understanding of what does HIA really truly bring to the table? Does it change decision making and to what extent? And we're still trying to figure that out. Does it, I'll just focus now because of time, just on the vulnerable, it says explicitly, focus on vulnerable populations, right? Because that's one of the things you say, that is what HIA is, one of the things it's really about. And I think Jane Perry wrote this the best, that she's written published on many articles on HIA, and I think she summed it up one way. She was saying that basically that only few, if none, HIAs have addressed in any meaningful way inequity. Okay, so we still have a long way to go to use HIA I know for myself, my experience is, okay, one of them I did focus very much on it. That was the case we were making for the location of that rec center. But the other three in the planning documents, I think this is where guidance would be really helpful. I know for myself, I grappled from the first one I did to the second one of do I have it throughout the document? Or should I have a separate section on it? And there's all these different decisions you're trying to make to how do I highlight this the most? One of them I had just one on, I had a specific children, seniors, and low income. Trying to say, okay, and these are the recommendations specifically to that. Still, is that meaningful? And so I think we still have a ways to go in this area. So I'm going to just zoom in on the first one that I did actually last year. And it is South Lincoln. It is a housing project. This is a housing project where we might say we're, in the past, we've isolated poverty. And now what was exciting about this project was looking at it and completely mixing all income levels. And it's very close to downtown. There's a lot of market value, a lot of people that would like to live in this area. And they will be completely dispersed with some that are way below poverty level. Okay. So it's an exciting project. It is run at TOD, a transit-oriented development. So they're looking at really bringing the retail in and really adding a lot to this neighborhood. Tripling density. Again, around transit-oriented, you know, transit stops, we're trying to increase density around those quite a bit. So how does that work? And last I wanted to particularly say on this is, how many of you have heard of the Healthy Development Measurement Tool? I'm not sure we've mentioned it yet. Here we've got a few hands. It's been used in a lot of different ways. And I know for myself, you can use it as a health person. There's all these indicators, and you're looking for some good data. There's some great indicators in there to use. It's great as almost a checklist. You're thinking, oh, I forgot childcare. Okay? So it gives you a way to kind of make sure you're covering everything that you want to cover. But in this case, what was unique was, okay, yes, I'm looking through the HDMT. But what happened with the planning, Methuen, they're a planning architecture firm out of Seattle, and they're fabulous. And what they said is, actually, everybody on this team, if you're looking at you know, the market value, some of you are focused on energy, some of you are, you know, planners, whoever you are on our team that are working on this redevelopment project or the master plan. Everyone, this is our framework. HDMT is for all of us to use as our framework. So look through there, look through something that's mostly specific to your what your specialty is, and zoom in on that and so that we were all kind of starting from the same place, that health is really what this is about. I thought that was really exciting, and it is unique because I haven't seen that HDMT used in other places. And just to let you know, it's thehdmt.org is where you can find all this. So just quickly, again, say that, you know, there's a lot of health issues at all these different sites. And some you have to add some after you talk with the community, some you get to take off the list. And like, for example, at relocation, yes, relocation is an issue, but it did not address this, decided that needs to be a separate document that is, you know, wasn't going to be addressing that in the HIA. So there's a lot of different issues that came up. You know, another struggle is, gosh, what are the sections? You know, some things pertain to safety, but also pertain to physical activity. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up coming up with five. And that was just a struggle, trying to figure out where should things go. But what I wanted to talk about is, a lot of times people say, well, what do these recommendations look like? And I don't have time to go into a lot of them, so I just kind of pulled a couple of them. People want to know, how much detail do you put in there? You know, that kind of stuff. And what we hear over and over again is, the more specific you can be about your recommendations, the more detail you can provide in those recommendations, the more likely that, mostly in this case, a complaining process, that they're going to be able to pick it up and address it and understand it and apply it. So, and that's what it's all about, is getting our recommendations ultimately in that master plan or whatever it is. Right? So, this one, just for example, this was just a random one, but it kept coming up. There was this one area that was saying, okay, we have this 10th Avenue, it's going to be more of a promenade, they're switching it to, it's going to be very pedestrian friendly and all these great things. And even the high school students that I met with said, we've got a water fountain. It seemed to be something in this community they were very interested in. Now, some of you were in specifically environmental health folks. Sometimes you start getting heebie-jeebies when you start hearing about like spray pads and all these triple ton of water kind of features out there. And so, you know, just to say, you know, I didn't want to kibosh anything, of course. Water fountains are great. They're a great way to bring people together. So, of course, support in that. But, okay, let's keep in mind we're in Colorado, water conservation, so let's think about what kind of feature. We need to think about stagnant water because we don't want mosquitoes to be breeding from this fountain. But more than anything, it's these, you know, like using spray pads. So this water is shooting straight up, and inevitably there's always this child sitting, standing in the middle of it in diapers, and just like, you know. And, you know, so we need to filter some of this water. You know, we need to filter this water. And quite often, if you really check into the regs, a lot of the new water features, there's not actually regs have caught up with a lot of that. And so again, that helps people just, okay, this is a great idea, but let's think about these other things. So that was just one example. How many time?
About 3 minutes.
Okay, perfect. So this one, I'm just going to start in a little bit of some of the outcomes. I'm not going to have a chance to get too many of them. But you just never know what you're going to come up with. Each one is so different of these HIAs. And in the process, there was a clinic, a health clinic that had been closed. And it was Denver Health. And that's our major public health, you know, hospital network in Denver. And it was closed. And it was, you know, what is the reason why that clinic was closed? I'm trying to find out why. We're going to triple the population. So, you know, before it wasn't used enough or something, you know, maybe we could open this back up. It's a reason. And in that process, they found out that there's this shuttle, that free shuttle that they'll pick up people at this community and some other ones around and take them to this hospital. And so I remember in the first stakeholder meeting, and I remember, and then at the first community meeting, saying, you know, I gave the phone number and those kinds of things, and said, does anyone know about this? And never did I get one person, whether it was the stakeholder group, I was very engaged in the community, or people in the community when I asked them, just didn't know about it. And it became one of these big things where they can't travel. You know, some people were walking in the middle of the night if they're not feeling well to this hospital, which is quite a distance away. I mean, these are the kind of stories that you hear. And that there's this shuttle that's available, but it wasn't promoted. And so, that, you know, you just never know what you'll come across. But it was, and another particular outcome, this is a policy change, so I'm going to just zoom in on this particular outcome. The very first, you know, part of an HIA is health promotion. It is getting in front of the community and saying, you know, physical activity and its connection to the built environment, and talk about children and this data, all this great data that we have. And, you know, people make it so that they understand this connection and have their own kind of behavior change, potentially. And understand, why are we putting a speed bump in here, eventually? Well, hopefully, I try to make some of those connections early on. So, the very first meeting, the councilwoman in Denver was at this meeting. It was a stakeholder meeting. And so I went through a presentation, just talking about the data and the connections between these two. She became the biggest advocate. I mean, I would hear from people all over going, oh my gosh, she's in whatever meeting they're talking about HIAs. And so sure enough, then she set up a meeting with the planning department, and in no time, and I was invited to that meeting also, and basically she said to the planning department, yeah, I want HIAs. And so what the response to that was basically that the next RFP that came out from the planning department, so they put out an RFP saying, here planning firms out there respond to develop this master plan. And for the first time, one of the things that they were to consider was health impacts. So things, you just never know what's going to come out of these, and you don't even necessarily plan on them, but you just kind of keep moving it forward, and you get these great advocates from people that are very supportive. So I'm gonna, so we have some time for questions and stuff. So anyways, if you have any questions, thank you very much. I'll go sit down. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Karen. Looks like we have about 7 or 8 minutes for questions. I thank all the speakers for staying on time. Go ahead with questions for any of the speakers. Yeah.
Go ahead. And then some other examples you gave, there was an alternative or a proposal. You were evaluating that one proposal for its health impacts, but in a lot of contexts for environmental impacts, if you're looking at a series of alternatives, and the job of the consultant is to compare them. That's a much less creative job, but I wondered if HIA had been used in both of those contexts.
Do you want to comment on that? Or?
Sure.
Okay. You've probably done more of the alternatives.
So that's exactly right. In NEPA, you're required, an agency is required to present not just the proposed action, but a series of alternatives. HIA, it really depends on the topic, right? Because we could be addressing a legislative proposal that's sort of it's a yes-no vote that you're looking at versus a much more complicated comprehensive plan, for example, where there are millions of sort of sub-alternatives on any given aspect of that plan. And so, you know, HIA's, you know, when we've integrated them with EIS, is we absolutely assess each alternative for health impacts, and that's a fairly rote, explicit part of the process. And then it really then depends outside of that context how much you get into assessing alternatives. But I do tend to think of it as a way to help look at trade-offs between different options. There is a decision being made, and it's really to sort of look at, well, we go this way, this is what you might expect for health, go this way.
John, so this is a great presentation, covering a lot of the different terms. In the last couple of days, I've heard talks about two different things that, and I haven't seen the intersection, and I'm not totally in this field, so maybe the intersection is obvious to other people or it's already going out, but it's, you know, a planning development level HIA and a community benefits agreement, and these are two kind of powerful concepts that have, I think, arisen in parallel. And I'm just wondering, it seems like, you know, when we talk about water fountains, you know, going in, you know, that's kind of something that often emerges out of a community benefit agreement. And I'm just wondering, to what extent are we merging these two ideas and making a community benefits agreement maybe a little more proactive and upfront in the thought process of a development project? But there are two different ways, really, of empowering, you know, the most vulnerable communities. I'm just wondering, to what extent are these concepts being merged?
Do you have
that? John, can you explain where you've seen? I mean, just say another sentence or two on community benefit agreements. Who's making them? Who's agreeing to what?
So, one context was when I was with the Environmental Defense Fund. There was a very large community benefits agreement that was negotiated around the building of the Staples Center in Los Angeles and the impact that was going to have on neighboring communities. But there was another talk that was just talking about the community benefits agreement that was being negotiated as part of. Kind of in the context of the EPA CARE program.
Interesting.
Some of the work that they were doing, and they were incorporating community benefits agreements in some of their projects. So that's
great. Okay. So I mentioned that industry is doing a lot more HIA. So when large industry does HIAs, the outcome is typically a health management plan, and oftentimes part of that is a community benefits agreement. Community benefits agreements in some ways address, you know, building resiliency. It's strengthening the aspects of the community that might be protective versus specific mitigation measures that might target an adverse impact that you've identified in the impact assessment. But so with industry, that's very much a way that I think people have thought. Outside of that, I don't know, does anybody else?
Yeah, go ahead.
So just a couple things. The first is that, so HIA has often recommended CBAs as a way of getting certain desires met through a development process, whether it's local hiring or living wages or whatever, or affordable housing. Often the HIA, so often community groups who are interested in CBAs as a tool, this is happening in San Francisco and in Oakland, have come to HIA practitioners and said, can you do this HIA to kind of prove that we need, that we should be able to ask for these things in the CBA? So it ends up building a case for what goes into the community benefits agreement. So, and then I think the difference is that HIAs are often a lot broader than health impact assessments. And so it's like a picture of Venn diagram, essentially, where there's overlap and then there's also some clear distinction. I think the beauty of CBAs is that they frequently have legal hooks, essentially, and HIA doesn't, if you're doing HIA outside the regulatory process, it doesn't necessarily have the legal hook. So what we say to community groups that are often asking about CBA
Okay, we can probably get one or two more questions. I do want to mention HIAs in this country have typically been voluntary without the legal hooks. Some of them, particularly with EIAs, have a legal hook, but many or most do not. But go ahead.
I just had a question about the natural gas drilling project. What was the reaction of industry when you started talking about the recommendations?
We've been working very closely with the particular company that is proposing the natural gas project. And we haven't had a whole lot of pushback from them. They actually did a lot of steps ahead of time to engage the community and knew that this type of thing, even though it wasn't formal in an HIA, that they needed to engage the community because of where they were planning on drilling. So that particular company hadn't had a lot of pushback. We anticipate some comments on the HIA from the industry. And I can't tell you what those comments will be because they haven't submitted them yet. They still have 6 days, and I think we'll get them at the end of that 6 days. But really, it's been, I think the industry, as far as I can read it, sees that this is a trend and this is the way things are going to go, and that it's to their benefit to try and work with the communities to find ways to do this in a more healthy manner. So.
Okay, in the back, standing up. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is from Roxanne also. I have a question about, maybe anyone wants to comment on this. It's one of the things I hear a lot about HIAs is how expensive they are. And I know you mentioned the community paid for it, and maybe you had some support from Hugh. But can you say something about the overall cost, or be able to amass the school resources to get it done? You know, we work with communities to make this recommendation as a tool.
Say, the total bill for the HIA to the county was about $150,000.
Let me just comment on that. The cost and depth and breadth of HIAs really varies from, as I mentioned at the very beginning, can really be a review in a few hours to the 300-page document. And the cost really relates to the time and resources available. And so you hear about these $100,000, $200,000 HIAs, but you can do a very meaningful HIA for $5,000 and $10,000. And some of the money that has been out there for mini grants in various states has been at the $5,000 and $10,000 level. It really depends on time and resources available, but something meaningful can be done at a lot less than the very large comprehensive ones. There's a lot of factors, and we're actually in the process of looking at what influences impacts. And part of it is timeliness. Part of it is receptiveness of the decision makers to even hear it. If they're receptive to it and think health matters, you don't necessarily need 100 pages of backup documentation. If they don't want to hear it, that 100 pages of backup won't make any difference anyway. So there's many factors in there that the size of the HIA doesn't necessarily predict. I mean, we don't really have that to say. It doesn't necessarily predict how effective because there's so many other factors that influence effectiveness.
In this case, if that's true, I think we wanted to make sure that we were covering every base that we could cover because of the topic and natural resources is a hot topic, and a lot of people on either side sort of it's a political question as much as a health question, and so we wanted to cover as many bases as we could, and that probably did drive up some of the cost. And we were doing it in a very short time frame. And so those sorts of things may influence how much a particular HIA would cost and how deep you want, how much you have to convince people of its of the results that you get.
In the survey that we just finished with about, I think we had about 45 respondents, we asked the question, we asked people to estimate how much time did it take, how much did it cost, and we got responses that ranged from, I think, 2 weeks at half an FTE to 2 years, to a year with two FTEs, and a range of costs from $10,000 up to $200,000. And, definitely when you look HIA by HIA, some of the rapid HIAs that people would have, would have been on the very low end of that spectrum achieved most of their objectives and were quite effective. So, initially, qualitatively, just looking over that data, it does not appear that there's a particularly strong correlation with how much it costs, how long it takes, and what you get out of it.
Okay, I think we better wrap up. The time is up. I think our speakers can stay. Let's first give them a hand.